welcome to episode 19 of the Python Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Roger Kirby, and with me as always is Mr. Stephen Rudkin.
Good evening, Roger. First things first, how was your beef dinner?
You've thrown me completely with that one.
You weren't expecting that, were you?
No, it wasn't. It's a curveball right from the get-go. It was very, very nice, thank you. We've had the beef on for about 2.5-3 hours, and we had some veg and some stuffing. It's an all year round. Sheck will be so proud of us. And I've got enough veg and enough stuffing and potatoes left over to have it again tomorrow. So it's all well.
It's like Christmas household. Christmas all over again.
Yes, I mean we call it a Sunday dinner.
But you have it on Saturday
in the UK, even though it's a Saturday because that's what it's known of. I don't know if it's a northern thing.
You guys have always had it on a Saturday because you tend to work, or at least the other half works on a Sunday.
Yes, I mean she's off tomorrow, but she tends to have 2 days off during the week. But yeah, it's a little peek behind the Kirby curtain.
Yes, indeed. So you can obviously work out from that we're on a Saturday, well, afternoon here in the UK. What have we got? Three hours till kickoff for the.
You're about to say we've got a 3 hour podcast ahead then.
We could do 3 hours. Maybe we'll
probably talk enough absolute tripe for 3 hours.
Maybe we'll do a Super Bowl special. Ooh. 3 hours.
Ooh, teaser.
Yeah, so about 3 hours till kickoff in the first divisional round matchup, Ravens at Patriots this evening. So should be able to get this out to you before then for all our loyal listeners. But I guess first things first, we need to just recap what's happened since we last recorded on New Year's Day.
Yes. Should we start with the wildcard weekend?
Yeah, quickly go over the results of the wildcard weekend. It was a pretty decent wildcard weekend once the that first game got out of the way with Mr. Linley going up against the Panthers.
Yeah, he was out of his depth, and I heard a comment. Somebody said about, like, you know, bringing almost like Tebow out of the wilderness or Vince Young and kind of sticking him in the center, but
or Kurt.
Yeah, I mean, it was just he was out of his depth, and the Panthers are a completely different team from the one that started off the season extremely slow.
Well, they've just got to 500 now with a record of 8-8-1 if you include that victory. So.
Yeah, I think the thing that is a concern going forward for them, we will touch upon it on the preview of the divisional weekend, but Cam is, he divides opinion massively. Yes. So.
Well, that was actually, something that came up a little bit on Twitter this week as well with Anthony discussing Cam Newton and... For me, a lot of people also do say that he does seem, you notice, he just throws fastball after fastball. And although he seems to have come back after the accident with a more reinvigorated lease on life and it kind of seems to be making plays at the right times in terms of when he should run, when he shouldn't run, and doing better at that. But the one thing is, it baffles me how much he throws off the back foot.
His mechanics in that game were all. I mean, to be fair to him, he came out of it and interviewed it and admitted it himself that his mechanics were off. But his mechanics are off quite regularly, you know. And we've spoken a lot, and I've kind of preached that actually his arm strength and his arm, you know, I use that. I hate the word arm talent, but I will use it because obviously we know what the context of it. But his arm talent is actually a hindrance to him in many ways because he gets away with far too much by being able to just stand in there and kind of sling it from anywhere. You know, especially when you've got someone like Benjamin who is, 6'7", is he? You know, fantastic spring, fantastic athlete. You know, you need to be able to put a little bit under it for actually, you know, to allow him to go up there and get some of these, you know, throw up the 50-50s, you know, look at the success that Stafford has had in, in previous years when he's been, you know, he's in trouble, he sticks it up there and goes, go let the playmaker go get it, Calvin.
I think as well, the interesting thing there with Benjamin is he doesn't have the greatest of hands, particularly with the rookie class. He's got that big body and the height, but almost his catching radius is huge, but he's had quite a few drops, but ultimately you could put quite a few of those down to probably the speed these balls are coming at him. But it seems at times, the key is with him, you get it up there, his advantage is the height, make the most of that, and you can't bring down fastballs 10 foot up in the air. So
not a chance, you've got to give him a chance.
That's one thing about Newton, that he's got a serious matchup coming up, obviously, this weekend up in Seattle, but the Panthers convincingly took care of business last week.
Yes.
And then it was on to the AFC North battle on that Saturday night matchup. Steelers losing out to the Ravens.
Yeah, and I think the, you know, it easily said, and it's right there in front of your eyes, but the loss of Lev Bell was huge, even though that the back end of the Ravens and their secondary is extremely beat up. I think it allowed them to not necessarily have that safety, you know, enter the box, and allowed him to be a little bit more deeper and provide some coverage to the DBs.
Although interestingly, early on as well, maybe more because it was a surprise to the Ravens, but Tate started the game fairly effectively there for the Steelers, but it wasn't necessarily too convincing, and you got a couple of so-called like 5-10 yard plays, but it was more as well, I guess, if you're the Ravens D, you had the opportunity to almost attack Ben, try and get to him, because you didn't have to almost see if he hands it off first, because that wasn't such the case with Bell not being there. So
yeah, and you know, the thing that will always be a positive and a negative for Ben, in the sense of that he holds the ball a long time, which sometimes enables him to make plays and extend plays when it doesn't look feasible, but also that causes him sometimes to take far too many sacks.
Yeah. So the Ravens, with the best quarterback in the league, quote from John Harbaugh there, took care of business. Thoughts on that comment?
It's one of those. I got a lot of time for Flacco, in the sense that he's one of those quarterbacks that, regardless of the previous play, seems to just come back in and is able to wipe the slate clean.
Yeah, but not. It doesn't seem he does it in a... Although he's obviously a very quiet man, it seems, from the outside. He's not one of those who, like, say, for example, almost a Cutler, he makes a bad play. It looks like he might have kind of washed it out, but it's just because he's kind of looks a bit washed out, like he almost didn't care about it.
Yeah.
Whereas Flacco mate, he just moved on from it.
Yeah, I mean, my background and my, you know, preaching about sports psychology and the rest of it, but I truly believe with Flacco that is a learnt skill.
Yeah.
That's not something that he just woke up in the morning and developed. That is something that over his time playing college ball and playing in the NFL, he has developed. It's not something that you just wake up and you develop the ability to put the last play around you. That takes that takes time and effort, and he will use something, you know, from a mental standpoint that enables him to, you know, I think wipe the slate clean.
That's the beauty as well of playing football and the way it's set up compared to other, say, more invasion game sports, that you've got downs, so you've got these set plays all the time that you're going to then get the chance to just take a moment, move on from what just happened at the last play, and you've got a whole another attempt.
Yeah, I mean, I always talked, tennis was always a good one for me, I always talked about, you know, the old Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah.
You had that thing at the bottom, and it was either the Magna Doodle was the one where you swiped the magnet across and it got rid of it, or the Etch-a-Sketch was you shaked. And I always talked about it being almost like an Etch-a-Sketch moment where you had that kind of internal shake and you started with a blank canvas. And Flacco seems to be extremely good at that. And one of the things that you do notice about him, when the pressure is on and there's high profile, his demeanour doesn't seem to really change. Because he is, you know, he is very laid back, and I think he leads by what he does in the field, and not because he's, you know, the sort of rah-rah guy in the middle of the huddle.
And then on the Sunday night games, we had Andrew Luck and the Colts taking down the Bengals, who 26-10 that game was, and they just almost fairly convincingly got the job done. Wasn't a spectacular game, and I mean the highlight of that play where Luck moves forward from the blitz and throws to the corner to Moncrief, was it?
Yeah, it was Moncrief.
Was obviously an exceptional play and almost the highlight of the game. And but it did look like two teams who, either one who would win that, doesn't look like they are going to go much further.
No, and the Colts, I think, regardless if they go on and beat Denver or not, have a big off season ahead of them, because obviously we all know the troubles at running back. I think they've got certain issues across the O-line. There is definitely, you know, Reggie Wayne, will he come back? You know, I know I appreciate that he's injured at the moment, but he's never going to be as productive as he was, you know, 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
T.Y. Hilton is a really, really nice piece. Is he a true number one?
He seems like, because he's not the type of body type and physique of what is now the standard number one across the league, like a Dez, Calvin, AJ Green type receiver number one.
You know,
don't
picture
him that way, do you?
No, you know, the tight ends, you quite like that. Allen and Flynn, the seamer, seems like a nice group if real kind of, you know, spectacular ability. But I think that, you know, Luck is going to be paid potentially soon. They're going to have to pay him. Is he still on his rookie contract?
Yes.
So I think he's got one more year of that rookie contract left, so they could always franchise tag him potentially. But they're going to have to start building a team around him and making sure that, you know, when you've got, for me, he is easily a top five quarterback.
Yeah, he's top five right now, and still he's the one QB of two or three years into his career. You just think he's got more potential than anybody of recent time, for sure.
Without a shadow of a doubt. You think of all of the things that Aaron Rodgers is at the moment. For me, Luck has the potential. I'm not saying he is going to be, but with that skill set that he's got, he has the potential to you know, match. And not from a numbers standpoint, because we all know the numbers are inflated in this passing end. Mm-hmm. Just when you look at him purely from an eyeball perspective, he has that ability to really seemingly take it onto a whole new level.
Yeah, and take over and take control of every game he plays, which I guess is the ultimate game of any quarterback, is to be the ultimate game manager and just have complete control of everything that's going on and be able to win no matter what. The Cowboys won down in Dallas.
They did. They took care of business just
about. Some people say they had a fair bit of help taking care of business. It ultimately was a complete farcical calamity of a play with that whole interference call. And as Matt Stafford said, it's just unbelievable to all the officials that they just reversed it, and with very little explanation.
I mean, for me, it begs the question is that you've had these guys that are working in crews for the entire year. And then you split them up.
Mm. It's odd,
you know, it wasn't that the... I don't necessarily have an issue with them picking the flag up.
No.
I do, but I don't. But, you know, you understand what I'm saying, is that it's one of those, is that I think it's personally, it's pass interference. But you can understand potentially why the other official on the field would say it wasn't. It was the manner in which it was communicated.
Yeah.
that I have a problem with is that once it's down and, you know, you've once got somebody announcing it before you've got, and you've got two guys having a conversation of actually, are we going to pick the flag up or are we going to leave it down? Mm. And then that begs the question of, you know, why are we breaking these crews up?
Mm. That's it. They didn't seem they have their normal communication. Every crew probably has, through working and experience with each other, a bit of a hierarchy, so to speak, of how
and a rapport, the way in which, you know,
they see things together and make those decisions. And so that was a mess, but still, I came away from the game overall feeling in a way quite disappointed by the Lions not finishing the job, and much of the talk there is about Caldwell being too conservative. But I think of all the four games last week, I think the three best teams won in the first three games, and I don't think Cowboys were the better team that game.
I don't think the Cowboys were the better team on that day. I think that if those two teams played each other five times,
you'd have a pretty even.
It'd be 3-2, and you could toss the coin as to who. I think they're very, very, you know, evenly matched. Because I think, you know, they could play next week, and I don't think that Stafford would hit the heights that he hit. Mm. You know, fair play to Stafford. I thought he played exceptionally well. You know, looked the better kind of quarterback through the first three quarters. But, you know, fair play and credit to Romo, who is, you know, and people are saying that he's rewriting the narrative of who he is. I personally don't think he is rewriting the narrative of who he is. I think that Tony Romo is Tony Romo, and he's an exceptional quarterback that I think has been forced for years to carry too much of a weight and too much of a burden to carry that Cowboys team. And I think he has been unfairly pillared at times for that. And as you've seen with other top quarterbacks, Drew Brees is a classic example this year, where I think that people have found out a little bit about, you know, take away Graham.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the running game at times, until they kind of got Ingram going a little bit, was not there. And all of a sudden, you know, the quarterback's feeling he has to make plays that normally he wouldn't have to make. And errors happen. You know, I think that's going to be, you know, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I think Luck has the potential to throw a few picks tonight, because I think he's going to feel, you know, with the pressure of the Broncos D, he's going to be forced to make plays that he wouldn't necessarily normally want to make or have to make.
Yeah, for sure. So we will touch on the picks for this divisional round ahead in just a little bit. But obviously with the wild card weekend in the bag, we then had a few bits of news during midweek that we can just discuss a little bit here. There's been obviously a lot of it's basically just call it interview week, interview and speculation week, because a lot of substance,
nobody's
to anything really going
being
on.
Snagged to a contract.
And I think, as we've talked about, we obviously everybody's waiting for those kind of 2-3 big coordinators that are still left in the playoffs, with Quinn and Gaze and McDaniels as well. So until they're out, and by all accounts, people are interviewing well, especially Quinn, and almost every team seems to want Quinn. But they've got to wait until he's out of the playoffs before they can try and
Dan
get him.
Quinn, to be fair, seems to be the one that a lot of stuff's revolving around. I'm reading about the Jets are waiting on him. Which I think is going to be, and you talked about it when we were talking in the week, is that there will be a domino and ripple effect from as soon as somebody is off the table, somebody is going to have
best.
Which
is surprising as well now, that if Rex Ryan is the type of character we think is a good head coach, and how he hasn't stood himself almost above all the other candidates that are out there, and that the team say that have interviewed him and Quinn are potentially still waiting for Quinn rather than Rex Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons are supposed to have been putting together a short list of candidates they want back for a second interview, and Rex is part of that. And this talk that he is, when he's going into the interviews, he's talking about Trestman as his OC, which I think is a perfect kind of match. Is you've got the spiky kind of personality of the head coach of Rex, but you know, we talked to him midweek, and I think that Trestman is the kind of guy that is meticulous, very level, very even keeled, and might not be the best guy to lead the entire organization. But from an OC standpoint, him and Ryan, and I'm talking about Matt Ryan now, and would seem a perfect kind of combination on the offense.
Yeah, you think about the personalities there, and that's what we've said, what hasn't potentially worked with Cutler, and you'd have him working with Ryan, who might not necessarily inspire and invigorate almost a quarterback because of his personality and Trestman. But then if you had that character like Rex, that's his job to do that. Trestman's the guy to give him the nuts and bolts to get the job done.
Exactly, and Ryan and Matt Ryan will be able to carry out, you know, his demands
asked of him, yeah,
to the letter.
So the only other couple bits of really different news compared to last week in the coaching circle is the couple of OCs that have now left their posts. Schottenheimer, yes, leaving the Rams. They didn't make much of an effort, by all accounts, to try and keep him.
Yeah, you get the impression that he was pushed.
They were calling around the colleges and saying, "Anybody want to make a play for our OC and make him an offer, and we'll let him go."
Yeah, because it's funny, because he's not moved to a head coaching role in the college ranks. So I think Schottenheimer, at 41 years old, has obviously got eyes on potentially being a head coach at some time. I think his route into the NFL head coaching is going to have to come through the college ranks, because his reputation has really taken a beating through the years as the Jets OC and now the Rams. The fact that he's not managed to... And yes, I appreciate that Bradford has been injured and that has hampered the offense to a greater or lesser extent, but, you know, not managing to, you know, get that explosiveness of someone like a Tavon Austin into the system has been a bit disappointing.
Yeah, and for Schottenheimer, he's probably just gone to Georgia a year too late, with obviously Todd Gurley moving and declaring for the draft, so...
It's going to be interesting, just on a side note, to see where somebody takes him, given that he won't compete at the combine with his injury. But by from what I've seen and from what I've read, he was the outstanding running back of this draft class potentially.
Yeah, that's for all our future podcasts as we lead up to the draft here in 2015. Sure, we'll cover all those things and look at the needs of these teams and see where, if the running back makes a resurgence almost and somebody gets picked in first round, which you don't see happening, to be honest, with other needs more important these days. And then the other, obviously, OC news of the week, please don't call it that, is Kyle Shanahan.
I thought you were about to talk about Ryan, how he, you know, set alight to the family home, and Melissa was really upset with him.
Yes, OC news, blast from the past there, from the OC. I'm sure all our American listeners are just fuming. It's probably like Anthony Down Under with Neighbours, who's just repulsed by this TV programme, which is appalling to Australians, but Brits love it, and vice versa. The OC is probably...
When you say Brits, do you mean you?
No.
Right.
But you used to watch it too, so.
Only because it was on. You watched it when we were at uni, and I thought, you know, I was giving you a bit moral support.
Well, we both sat down of an evening and watched the OC.
Right.
Anyway, OC news. Kyle Shanahan. By different reports now, potentially saying that he's just resigned from his post is one thing. It's is the official release from the Browns. When it was first breaking that Shanahan was, there's tension there and that disagreements and all sorts, that, but then he's left his post and and won't be OC there next year.
Huge loss, do you think? I mean, I personally think it is.
You almost, there's lots of speculation you can make about this, but you think from his perspective, it's almost like, I've done a great job here, but the powers that be are almost making a mess of this. If they can't pick a quarterback, whoever's choosing or playing, or maybe that's the issue, he's almost at a loss as to where they're going forward, maybe because the owner and the GM and head coach haven't got really necessarily the right plan that he thinks works, with whether it's going to be Hoyer, Manziel, yeah. What they're doing.
I think you're spot on. I think he's considered at the moment one of the bright young mind, offensive minds in the game. And I think he's jumped before it potentially becomes toxic and poisonous there. I think it's a loss for them because, you know, he's proven that he is able to put whatever quarterback, you know, with RG3 and with Hoyer for much of the year into situations where they can succeed. And I'm convinced he could have potentially done that with Manziel next year, whether Manziel would be able to, potentially execute and do those things is another matter because, the jury is well and truly out on that young gentleman. But moving on from him, it's going to be a nice pickup, and there's talk of him potentially landing at the Rams, and there's also maybe talk of him ending up... where else was it? I've just read and I've completely blanked. But the Rams was definitely one.
And then there's obviously random questions as to whether, or speculation as to whether, the Shanahans will be teaming up again. If it was anything like what happened in Washington towards the end, probably not. But you don't know from the outside what their relationship is still like professionally to each other and how that would go ahead. So might be a nice 1-2 combo for maybe even a Bears.
Yeah, I mean, I said to you in the week that I'd quite like to see Kyle be the offered the head coaching role at the Niners, purely because of his record of putting quarterbacks in positions to best suit their skill set. And I was tweeting to Anthony in the week, and we were talking about Cap, and he broke the news to me that Cap was about to start working with Warner in the offseason.
Yeah.
Which I personally think is great. I've got a lot of time for Warner, and really hope he does get inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, for a guy to seemingly go through a midfield slump and resurrect his career, I think and get back to that level deserves a lot of kudos. But I think that's great for Cap. One of the things is if he's going to develop and evolve and grow during this off season, you're still going to have to put him in situations next year in which best encapsulates his skill set and allows him to succeed.
And if it's like we talked about earlier, the almost domino effect, when one drops, the rest will follow, because one of the guys who's interviewed there at the Rams is Greg Roman, and obviously if they bring in somebody like Carl, I know, or a head coach who does the coordinating jobs as well on offense, then obviously that paves the way for somebody like Greg Roman to move on.
There's talk about the Browns are after him, which would potentially be a nice move for the Browns, given the fact that, and I appreciate that the 49ers lost their way a lot last year, but during those early years, the early starts of Kaepernick, they certainly, him and Harbaugh, certainly put Kaepernick in situations to succeed.
And then nothing really much too else substantial in terms of coaching roles, but there's obviously been a couple of front office moves made, the main one really being in Washington there with Scott McLuhan being the new GM. But
yeah,
first
things
first,
really...
I can't understand how his name is pronounced that way, because being over here in Britain, we'd look at that name and say McLaughlin, but there we go.
Was it Keith McLaughlin was an Australian Home and Away star that went on to be a songwriter guy?
That sounds quite feasible, but yeah.
Anthony, you're going to have to hit us up with that one. I'm sure he's got his entire back collection on vinyl.
So McLuhan, as I still can't work out from the the letters the way they're assembled, but we'll go with it because that's what we're hearing. Obviously, he's got a great background from his Niners and Seahawks days, and looks like a good fit there from the real personnel football side of things. There's a lot of talk about the different movement around these organisations and what really you have in terms of your duties and final says on roster or cap or draft, etc. All these different GM titles
have to be moving people upstairs to be cap man and bringing in personnel guys to be the GM. Pace seems to be a nice move in the Bears. From what I'm reading, he was highly regarded as one of the trusted lieutenants of Sean Payton in New Orleans.
Yes, so that's pretty much it, really, for what's happened this week in the NFL from that standpoint. A couple of things we still want to cover here on this episode. We've got a mailbag, although very small mailbag, that we could just answer a couple of questions on. So the first one, after tweeting out this week from @pipe_slippers, Anthony, just to let everyone out there know, was @Joaquin_D'Souza.
Are you sure you pronounced that
at all.
Bit correctly? Is it not Jacqueline?
I don't know. His Twitter name there is L. Souza, so maybe you could search for that if it's easier. But anyway, he tweeted at us, who's been the biggest running back disappointment, obviously, of this year. He's named Bush, Sankey, Gerhardt, Rice, Peterson. There's obviously kind of two parts to this, whether you just strictly look fantasy wise or obviously, I suppose, real world, real life football.
I think if you take away Rice and Peterson out of that, which is, you know, the things that they got themselves involved in, you know, were just shocking stuff that you just really, really, really wouldn't want to see in any walk of life, let alone, you know, associated to professional sport. I would personally say Sankey.
Yeah, a lot was talked up about him. I think the trickiest thing across a lot of these running back situations this season, we saw so much of a committee approach by so many teams, or trying to play hot hands but seemingly playing the cold hand at times, and kind of miss tinkering around with obviously Sankey and Green there, and a bit of even McCluster getting involved, and
yeah, it's sort of a scat back,
all a bit of a mess in some of these teams. So
I think the surprise for me with him was that he, as you say, he came out of the draft with a really good reputation. You know, there was talk of whether it's him, is it Hyde, you know, as the best kind of running backs. And when you consider the amount that the Tennessee Titans have, I nearly stumbled on that because I just think of hands loose one. The amount that they've invested in that O-line, they really didn't move the ball on the ground at all very well. Now, when you consider the likes of West and Crowell with the Browns did really, really well, and they didn't come with a big reputation. I mean, I think West went undrafted, didn't he? If I remember correctly.
I believe he did. If he was, it was very like last round. But I mean, I'm trying to look down the. I've been trying to look at some of the numbers. If you take more of a strict fantasy look at this, and I mean, it's hard to really pick. A lot of the big names really did perform. So obviously Murray was exceptional. Bell, Lynch, Forte, Foster, Lacey, Charles was the overall top six or seven there in that order. So they all kind of did the job for you that you wanted. Surprisingly, your boy Miller down in Miami had a lot better season than anticipated.
Yeah, and I think, and again, that might be something that you think about with Sankey, is that, you know, Miller has struggled, you know, in previous incarnations of the Dolphins offense, but Lazor has come in and really sparked Tannehill and that offense, and the line's become a little better. And with that, Miller has
has excelled, and definitely looks a positive move going into the 2015-16 season.
I think if I were to pick two guys who we just look from a fantasy perspective that I'd say were the biggest busts of 2014, I'd actually say Shady McCoy has got to be up there in the running, because he was obviously drafted so highly regarded to do really well in the Indies, actually made 1,300 yards, but his didn't really get in the end zone very much this year. So he was over 120 points below Bell and Murray at the top of the order there. So just looking there, he came, 12th, 13th overall when he was drafted, one or two. So he's one of the biggest busts, but fantasy-wise. And then I think the other one going into the year, you also looked at the Rams situation. Everybody thought, based on the way the season finished.
Yes, a very good point.
Last year. For some reason, the name escapes me right now. But Zach Stacy really failed to deliver what was expected of him. And they obviously then started to go to Mason and Cunningham and mixing it up as well there. But there was a lot of that going on. I mean, Zach Stacy finished the season 46 points just from that aspect. But obviously had the Gerhardt situation that Anthony mentioned there.
He did nothing, and I guess you could also, within that, in many ways, Ben Tate was a huge letdown.
Yes. He was dubbed to be, like Gerhardt, he's given his chance to be a number one somewhere.
He was the best free agent running back on the market, and did absolutely nothing.
That's a very good point, and I almost probably throw that one up there as the biggest bust. If you look across the league, there's a lot of guys who didn't deliver, but more often than not, it was injury-related, I feel.
Well, I mean, another one to consider as well is Doug Martin, because he came out in his rookie season and looked amazing. And I know that he injured the previous year, he injured his shoulder, was it? Or was it his hip or something? But he did absolutely nothing last year, you know, they were handing off carries to Bobby Rainey in the end and Charles Sims.
I mean, all these three guys, really, four guys we've just been mentioning, all ended up the season similarly. Doug Martin, 67 points overall, 400 yards. Tate, 67, 370 yards.
Well, I've actually got one more.
Oh.
What about Monty Bull?
Yeah, a lot was expected of him, obviously.
He was there, but he was a bell cow. You know, when you consider that now CJ Anderson, and that offense is now purely molded around, you know, they are almost a run-first team.
Yeah.
And if you'd come out of a coma 9 months ago and you said, oh, the Broncos are now a run-first team. All right, Monty Bull must be, you know, really doing well. No, it's CJ Anderson.
Again, obviously got hit with a bit of injury there. Going on as well, so the ones who got injured, it's hard to really say too much of a bust. At sometimes it's obviously not their fault, but then at the same time you're playing a position that maybe you're not going to be meant to be able to tolerate and go forward long term. It's
durability is a huge factor at running back. You know, the ones that are successful, rightly or wrongly, seem to dodge injury.
Another disappointment as well is D'Angelo Williams, injured again, in and out.
Yeah, and they pay him a lot of money.
And so, quite a few names there. I think to go from his list, probably you go with Sankey.
I'd still personally say for me Sankey, because there was so much positive chatter around him, and I guess that he was the guy that for me going into the season I was kind of most looking forward to seeing.
Ended up with 569 yards and 2 touchdowns.
It's brutal.
Yeah, considering Garrett Blunt ended up with that in his last few weeks for the Patriots and 5 touchdowns.
Belichick just doing it was a personal kind of smite on the spot. Is it smite? Smite on the rest of the league? I'm sure it's the word smite.
I think the two I'm going to put up there is Tate and Sankey for me in terms of what was expected and what they delivered going into the season. So thank you very much for the question, Anthony. As always, our most loyal listener and tweeter to us at at pipe_slippers. We have an email. Well, it was a comment left on our webpage at Podomatic, pipeandslippers.podomatic.com, from Dean over in Virginia. So he said he's just randomly joined our playoff challenge. He obviously thought he was looking for Daniel Jeremiah's Move the Sticks group and came across our titled Move the Sticks Playoff Challenge.
Big two.
So delightfully amused when I tapped into your podcast and started listening to a British view on American football. You can just say football. We know what you mean, Dean. The possibility of creating a franchise team in England must be exciting to you. So, Roger, is it? It's not something...
I don't know.
No.
Do you know, it sounds really, really silly, and it might sound really, really pompous and really, really arrogant, but after playing our brand of football over here so professionally and kind of watching it and kind of falling out of love with it, I quite like that it's over in the States because it feels like it's mine and no one else is allowed it over here.
Despite the fact it seems to be the fastest growing spectator sport in this country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind that, you know, the, you know, I talk intently to you, but my brother doesn't watch it, my parents don't watch it, my grandparents don't watch it, the people who I I'm at work with don't watch it. It's just my little
piece of sport that I really love. That do. I think there's too many, more from a practical standpoint, there's too many issues, questions. I don't know whether I think a British public in time could get behind a team and give it that home field advantage it should need, but I think there's a huge, long growing process to get to that kind of level.
Short term, I think that's a very, very good point because we've experienced that at the games that we've gone to watch over here, and it's so weird. I mean, we started a little kind of tally chart. Well, you did, didn't you? Where could we find all 32 jerseys?
And we did.
Yeah.
So even when you have the London franchise playing at home against the Patriots, you're still going to get particularly the girls probably screaming and supporting Brady and relishing in being able to see those teams and cheering them on.
He is a handsome devil, you can see why.
Yes, indeed. I think that it's obviously a huge long process, and to me as well, like you say, I quite like just being able to watch it, and this intrigue as a British fan is trying to watch something that's almost exotic to us. You're trying to, and it's almost quite an effort in terms of the time zones, and it's you devote yourself to being able to be an NFL fan. And if it came here and we're playing 1 p.m. games on a Sunday our time, so America gets an early morning game on TV, it might take the edge off what is the NFL from our perspective as it stands. So I guess that was the main question involved in this email from Dean, but he also talks about he runs fantasy football leagues himself and gives out coaching awards, etc., and trophies. So we will pursue Dean as a listener and a friend to the podcast and look to see how we can get people like himself and our listeners and our fantasy league players and owners.
Spread the word.
Yeah, and get us all involved into growing, maybe even expanding the Move the Sticks League next year. Who knows?
Yep, the more competitive, the better.
There we go. We just had a slight technical there on my end of things with the recording, but we should move on. Just going to clear up really the divisional round picks, which are taking place imminently.
Who have you got, Chief?
Not the Chiefs, that's for sure. They don't play.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm still learning.
Well, just to quickly mention, I went 3-4 last week on the picks. The only team that let me down were the Lions. Sorry, Tony, there in San Antonio. I let you down and went against your Cowboys, but hey, I'm sure you don't want everybody just rooting for your men. So this week I've gone again for three home wins, Patriots, Seahawks, Packers, and just because I kind of feel like it's a bit like we talk about these narratives, you want something like the Luck Colts narrative to stop, in the sense that you want their whole team to perform, get the job done, and see if they can move into the so-called elite of this league and not just be a team that can bruise and beat their way up on that AFC South and be a one-and-done playoff team. So going for the Colts.
I have all four home teams, so I am taking the Broncos in that one, mainly because I just, as I alluded to early on in the day, I think the defense is going to be the difference in that game for the Broncos, and that, you know, he's going to force Luck to making a few throws and a few plays that he wouldn't want to make. I think it'll be tight because, obviously, you know, from some of the pictures that I've seen out in Denver, it looks cold. If the wind gets up, would be my... Yeah. And I don't think, as you know, the narrative of Peyton is that it's when it's cold outside. I think that's part of it. I still believe it's the wind is the killer for him. Mm-hmm. If that wind gets up and he's forced to throw, and that wind is, you know, swirling around the stadium, things are going to get dicey. So they're going to have to lean on Anderson. And I don't believe that the Colts are that great defensively, apart from obviously Davis on the back end, and Tolza? I can't remember this Davis. I can't remember his name. The two cornerbacks of the Colts.
I think what will be really interesting to see is Julius Thomas and see if he's finally 100%, because he struggled for so long with trying to play and not looking himself, and almost for the sport itself, almost they need to see these guys performing at their best and getting back out there and seeing that almost emphatic, just relentless Broncos offense get going again. And Julius seems to be one of the more important Jenga pieces out there.
Yeah, they're gonna it's Greg Toler. I knew it was around that name. They definitely need to step up if they're, you know, potentially going to go into Foxborough, if we are to believe that the Patriots are going to take care of business.
One final thing just to finish off here is quick mention of our Move the Sticks playoff challenge group. Just notice we've got 11 users involved in it, and thanks to Dean for randomly joining without realising it who it was.
Unsuspected surprise, and he got to listen to me and you. I mean, what more could he want out of life?
So obviously seeing just a couple of the different tactics involved in this playoff challenge for the ones who've played it before, you've got four guys who have gone for their solid tactic of you're going to pick your two Super Bowl teams, you pick your seven players from those two teams, and even if they are guys who aren't playing in the wild card round, you don't worry about it, and you go through week one with 0 points because of the multipliers by the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
we'll make it. So you've got yourself, obviously you went for the Seattle Patriots, all in on them, so you've got nothing at this point. Dean has gone Green Bay, Denver, all in on those guys. Anthony has gone the same route, Green Bay and Denver. So Anthony and Dean, if it becomes a Green Bay-Denver final, will be probably playing off for the leaderboard, with their only difference in all their picks was the defense. So that'll be interesting to watch out for. We currently have Aaron, our British professional cricketer, who's involved in our league. He is
cricket,
a mad, passionate NFL fan as well. Spends most of his time in between playing cricket just listening to all the podcasts. So Aaron leads this podcast because he's gone with the opposite tactic, which is trying to pick, I'm guessing, the best matchups of the week, and he went 94 points week one. So you feel like that's a good lead, but at the same time those multipliers might come back to bite him because he's already lost his running back. He's got three Cowboys in there, so if the Cowboys go well for him and make a couple more wins, he's got the triplets. Yeah,
just looking at the Rich Eisen one there, and the leader in that has 111. So to be fair, Aaron's is a pretty nice start.
But so far, he's lost Jeremy Hill and Antonio Brown, so moves on to this stage with a couple of Panthers and the Cowboys triplets. Myself, just to explain, I've got 20 points on the board, but I've kind of half gone in on, which probably won't
it's
work.
It's the story of your life. Yeah. You're never fully in there, are you?
Never fully into it. So I've gone half in on the Seahawks and the Patriots. I've got five of my eight picks are Seahawks-Patriots guys. Just looking at the players involved, I don't fancy picking any receivers from either of those sides. So
no, you see, that's where I've taken the huge risk. You know, I've got Edelman and Baldwin, which I toiled with for ages. Mm. But when I played it 3 years ago and tried to do the pick it on a sort of week-to-week basis and got my fingers well and truly burnt, and last year I went with the Seahawks and Broncos and came very close to near the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, so I've left my receiver options open, but so Brown as well, I've missed out on, but getting 11 points from that week one isn't the worst. So that's where we stand with that. Aaron is the leader technically, but watch this space as our playoff challenge unfolds.
Good job.
That's about it. So enjoy divisional round, everybody.
Yes. Plans for the evening? We've got 2 hours until it all kicks off.
Just get some food in and get ready for it. I'm not sure we'll be making the late game tonight as well. Our time, the second game. Is
yeah,
what,
you're working one, tomorrow, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, working on a Sunday. So, but I'll manage to stay up and be able to. It's nice the games tomorrow evening for us on Sunday night aren't so late, with that second game finishing around midnight or half past, I suppose. But
yeah, it's a bit of a push for me because I have to get up at 5:30 the next morning for work, but we shall see. I love this weekend. I love the Saturday and Sunday. It's really exciting. So I'm all beefed in and out, so I might have a little snooze if I can fit one in there. Or me and the other half have been watching The Blacklist at the moment. So another little peek behind the Kirby household.
Brilliant. Well, enjoy divisional round, everybody. And the what have we got? Last seven games left of the season only. And,
what are we going to do then?
Should we watch baseball?
I've tried. I really, really want to. There's just too many.
We haven't got time now to discuss our issues with baseball. So
that's for another day.
On that note, we've hit this podcast out of the park, and we'll see you next time.
Beautiful. Oh, I've been sipping a tea.